Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 25, the original series, season 2, episode 17, a piece of the action.
Ship's log, Mr. Spock reporting, Dr. McCoy and I are prisoners of the chief criminal boss of a society patterned after old Earth gangsters.
Put your hands over your head, or you ain't gonna have no head to put your hands over.
Don't you, Kirk? You bet you do. But after I get through with you...
I don't have those tools by then. I'm gonna call up your ship and have them pick you up in a box.
I kinda like this. I may get one myself.
Daddy! Daddy!
Wait a moment. What have they done? What have they done to you? What have you done?
Okay, Pally, we're going for a ride.
Yeah, you're giving Elvis a handy. You're probably expecting this famous rock and roll star to, not just sort of jizz in your hand. That's the first thing you're not expecting. And the second thing you're not expecting is for him to then sheepishly exclaim, "Look at all the babies we just killed." Anyway, speaking of 1968.
A piece of the action.
She got a piece of that action. Oh, by the way, I was thinking about it, and I really need to get a little more serious in these podcasts. I've been a little bit too...
You've been too wacky.
Been too silly, too wacky.
The wacky meter was too far.
I just think I need to take things a little bit more seriously. So I don't have my monkey socks on, but I have my imitation Pac-Man socks on.
I am more comfortable with those socks than the socks you were wearing last week. I will say that.
Yeah, those barrel of monkey socks.
You're still wearing those flash shoes, though.
Yeah, flash shoes. I should have worn my Skechers, but I was kind of, in a rush.
Anyway, let's not get into it.
It's just the first thing that came to mind. But yeah, there's this kind of Pac-Man.
Put on your flash.
Pac-Man.
What sound
socks.
Effects are you going to use to indicate seriousness?
They're Pac-Man socks, but it's not actually Pac-Man. It's something else. So it's just like an imitation.
That's a serious sound.
That's indistinguishable from the wacky sounds you played last week.
Nah, that's serious.
Excellent. Well, anyway, 1968 was the year of this particular episode, a piece of the action. Star Trek's, from the original Star Trek, second season, the 17th episode, a classic adventure wherein Kirk and Spock and McCoy et al. Encounter a planet of mobsters.
Yeah, that was kind of a...
Iotians.
Yeah, they're from Sigma Iota 2, and it's funny, they right from the start, it's going to be silly, because they introduce that guy down, says his name, he wants you to call him Boss, and Kirk's just like, what?
Yeah, right.
So what are you talking about? And he just laughs at it. It's
throughout this entire episode, Kirk doesn't take a single one of these people seriously.
No, yeah.
At no point in time, even when they're pointing guns right in his face, he just totally is just, he's playing around with
them. That look on his face.
This is, this is definitely, speaking of serious, this is definitely one of the more silly kind of episodes. Even Spock gets a little of the...
He gets pretty silly at the end there.
Yeah, even though he's being serious, he's still there's still comic relief there within Spock, and I guess
like the third guy, or I don't know, pretty much the last guy, he does the Vulcan neck pinch to, does that goofy eyeball thing where he's like, whoa! Everyone else, the Vulcan neck pinch was they just slumped down, but that very last, the guard at the door, when they're going into Krakow's
after the kid wanted a piece of the action, he pinched the guy on the shoulder. What's interesting is after Kirk did a just some kind of hammer fist on the first guy, it was like, okay, it happened, but not, you didn't hear much. You kind of heard a poof, but then it turned around and Spock did his Vulcan pinch. His Vulcan neck pinch.
That's the shorthand that the young kids are using.
And the music suddenly went all like, it almost seemed like they reused a part of music and it wasn't long enough to fit the scene, so they didn't insert it right away. If you'll watch that, you'll notice that Kirk hits the person, no soundtrack. Spock does the neck pinch, and then suddenly the soundtrack gets really crucial.
I guess you were the luckier guy if Spock got to you, because he just would neck pinch you, and you'd wake up later and you'd be like, oh, whatever. Like, if Kirk gets to you, then Kirk's got to beat your ass up and knock your ass out. Like.
Yeah, it's not going to be pretty.
And Kirk is really good at just physically assaulting people. He just beats the shit out of people.
Oh, did I actually record that?
What is that?
This is the music that plays when first. Remember, Kirk. First, you hear nothing, and then when Spock pinches, you immediately hear this.
I thought you were going to be more serious.
When you said you recorded the song, I thought you had actually recorded the music.
Yeah, I know.
You recreated it very successfully, though.
Yeah, I think I probably intended to listen to that beforehand and sing it back, but this worked just as well. So.
All right. So, seriously,
like some serious shit was going down. Why didn't it happen when Kirk punched? Why did it happen when Scock
with his Vulk pinches.
Shrunk.
All right, so
that's like his signature move, and that was like it's the '60s, man. You see in all kinds of shows with people beating each other up, and then like this is the only show where you see like Spock doing the neck pinch.
Well, then they should have done the neck pinch first. I'm just saying you don't start the fight scene music after the first punch has already happened.
Right.
I mean, maybe there's situations where you could, but I don't feel like this was one of them.
It's bad editing. Yeah.
And that's why I think they reused an old snippet, and it wasn't quite long enough to fit the scene, so they just started it a few seconds later.
They were like, this
later.
Is good music, we want to use it, but it didn't fit.
Can't just use up all that music.
Just use that music. The music was really good. The music was really expressive.
Oh, TOS is always fantastic with the music. They're really, really excellent with it.
TOS doesn't, before I forget about the music, TOS isn't afraid to be, I mean, I guess all of them have some sort of moments of silliness and levity or whatever, but like TOS outright, there's some goofy moments in that show that doesn't quite.
It owns it, I mean it is at times a very campy show, and I was going to say that just to
it's
get
not
that out
dry.
Of the way,
it not
is
dry.
This is absolutely by design and in implementation is a goofy, silly episode in a lot of ways, but what's kind of fascinating about it is the fundamental message. There's I see two key purposes. They're basically the same thing for this episode. First of all, it serves as a narrative justification for the Prime Directive, which at this stage in Star Trek, that's the characters implicitly understand the Prime Directive, but the show producers are having to explain it and justify it to the audience. They've referenced it prior to this episode, but this is a really great example of like what happens if you don't fucking follow the Prime Directive.
And they actually mention when they talk about the Horizon, because the Horizon came over, and then they're talking about how the Horizon had come over, and it was like, oh, that was 100 years ago, and guys like, what are y'all talking about?
It was like Archer times.
Yep. It was interesting.
Yeah, it would have been that.
They say, I think it was Kirk or Spock says, it's Kirk. He says the Horizon's contact came before the non-interference directive went into effect. Mm-hmm. So,
which is Archer's time.
Yeah.
They don't have that either.
Before the non-interference I'm having problems with like
Scock. Scock and the Vulks.
Before the non-interference directive went into effect. So, yeah. So it was that's a reference to, I guess, the Prime Directive, I guess the showrunners just hadn't come up with a name for it.
Well, and the name goes back and forth even on up through TNG and other things. But we also have to talk about, right, so the showrunners are they have this Prime Directive, the Non-Interference Directive, etc., whatever you want to call it. They've established this in the show, and they're pushing it a lot. It does get pushed repeatedly, and this is one of the key examples of it. This is the negative example. This is when the Prime Directive is not followed, this is what happens. And we have to ask ourselves, all right, why were they pushing that? Was it just a personal thing for the show producers? And if you look at the year, 1968, what's the biggest thing going on in terms of the United States, the Western world generally, but particularly the United States, is the Vietnam War. And multiple quotes in this episode, as silly as this episode does, multiple quotes in this episode touch upon, they basically make analogies to the Vietnam War. For example, Kirk says, when he gets down to the planet and is talking to Oxmix, right? And
Oxmix
is explaining the deal. Kirk says, you want us to supply you with arms and assistance so you can carry out an aggression against your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Contextually, that the way that quote is structured is meant to be a hit the nail over the head, kind of like super mega overt reference to the Vietnam War, because for a long time it was not called a war. It was, you know, it was an aggression.
It was a police action.
And it's fundamentally what was going on, which was we were supplying weapons and assistance to the South Vietnamese so they could attack the others. And simultaneously, the Chinese and other forces were supplying funds and training and weapons and stuff to the North Vietnamese for this proxy war.
Kirk wasn't getting anything out of it in this one, at least not from Oxmix. The only reason Krakow offered something is because he wanted to outdo Oxmix.
No. Of course Kirk wasn't...
It was such a weird...
Kirk had no interest in the deal. I'm just saying the quote itself is merely... It's meant... The audience at home would have understood what Kirk is saying. He was saying that a civilized society would not do that. And at the time, the viewers were living in a United States that was in fact doing that.
Yeah.
And has continued to do that in the intervening years, right?
I wasn't disagreeing with you.
So that's a really interesting thing. And I think you see less of that overtness in a lot of modern Trek. I think 60s Trek was pretty bold in a lot of their stories about making things very clear what they were saying, as opposed to being a little bit more subtle about it.
Well, even though it was in passing reference, they made a direct comparison to the Bible as well. And that was not exactly subtle. Like, you could have drawn those conclusions without them.
A whole society built up around a silly old book.
Yeah, right. And they actually say, like the Bible. I think McCoy actually says that. So
they're calling it the book.
The book.
That's the book.
So Iocean culture was at the beginnings of industrialization when the horizon left. And they see this book. And this book is about, written in 1992,
yeah.
This book was.
Yeah, I was 12 years old when this book
was written.
It
didn't look like it was written in 92.
No, it didn't.
It looked like it was written in like 32.
And they made it all big for some reason.
And they had multiple copies, because the guy, wasn't Oxmix all like, hey, that's the only one of those there is, or something.
Did they have another copy?
But then Krakow
had one.
Krakow's office, they had one.
Well, maybe they just meant only original.
Yeah, and I was thinking maybe it wasn't even original. Maybe they made it look all bigger and puffier.
Yeah, right, because the original wouldn't make sense for it to be all big and puffy, so who knows?
It seems weird.
But that Oxmix fellow was kind of a jerk, right? I mean, he brings him down, and... You know, I mean,
he had a nice suit.
He was kind of dumb, too. I mean, he's threatening these people that have a spaceship. Presumably, if his hostage situation works out with Kirk, and even if he somehow kills him, he's got to know that regardless of what happens on the planet, they're going to get fucked over, like, by someone. Well, but unless they really think there's a spaceship in space with nobody backing them up.
You know... Because I kind of went back and forth on this a little bit too. They do seem overall, at least the
very
bosses,
thankless as well.
No, they seem pretty clever, right? They figure some stuff out. I mean, Oxmix is able to conclude he's basically like, look, it's been 100 years. I figure you got even better shit now than they had back then.
Well, I mean,
you know,
it's not that clever.
But you know, it's not nothing, especially if you're pre-industrial.
Well, they
society.
Did say they were smart. They were smart, but they were very impressionable, is what Spock said, I believe.
Yeah.
And
imitative.
And imitative. That's right.
If their entire culture is truly as it's explained, is built around this concept of these 1920s gangs, and not even just 1920s gangs of Chicago, but written in 92 with the various assumptions of, you know, inaccuracies or whatever. Who knows who wrote this fucking book, right?
So, who knows?
So they have invented a society based around that, and that's constricted their perspective, right? And when you base a society on a doctrinal situation like that, like a book, the 1920s gangs, and you're like, all right, everything in the world has to be like this book. That's whatever they decide. That was the conclusion they made. That's going to constrict their way of thinking. So I agree with you that it's kind of dumb for him to be like threatening people with a spaceship. But on the other hand, he's not thinking in terms of spaceships, right?
I don't know though. Because he knows they exist. I see what you're saying, where he sort of sees things that are a certain way and there's no other way. It's like when they ask, does everybody have guns on this planet? And that other goon goes like, what kind of stupid question is that? Huh? Yes. You know, it's like, well, do they or don't they? And he's like, we never find out. But like he says, it's a stupid question without. Yeah. And he doesn't even realize that. Well, to people who aren't from here, that's not a stupid question.
It's again, because their frame of reference is so constricted.
And I can't say because I'm not them, but I would like to think that if something came from some other, literally otherworldly source, and I didn't, and they have ability to transport to the planet back and forth and shit. Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't want to fuck with them.
I
definitely wouldn't want to bring them down and be like, do all this shit for me right now. I've tricked you into coming onto the planet. I'm going to trick you again later, Spock and McCoy, by telling you there's a truce. I'll pull a double fuck on you.
By the way, this was the year 1968. January was the Tet Offensive, mm-hmm. which was on January 1st, the North Vietnamese abrogated the truce that was put in place by the Pope. Seriously, the Pope helped negotiate a peace.
That's right.
And January 1st, the North Vietnamese broke the truce, and then towards the end of January was the Tet Offensive. So in other words, the milieu of the time would be like, people are going to break their promises.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
And I will concede that you are smarter than these gangsters.
Well, yeah, so that's the other thing.
You wouldn't have done that.
I'm not going to take any sort of pride in being smarter than some like stupid gangsters.
Viet Cong
in a show written,
yeah,
some characters
are.
Written in a show. I'm not going to say stupid gangsters. I'm going to say characters written in a show.
Is that an anti-Italian joke?
Yes, but...
That one guy wasn't Italian.
But... Anyways, given that you fucked them over twice and like are just being a total prick, and they come from some other land and they have powers of transport and they got these weird heaters, and
if they had done this with the Klingons, they would have just been vaporized.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So they
story over. It would have been a short trek.
They could have been they could have been a little more clever, I think, but yes, they were definitely sort of trained to that one worldview that everything is like that. And even if you want unity, it meant having to be crime bosses and stuff.
Yeah, and yeah, it's another example of course, limits on how much is it worth. They want to tell this particular story, and they're like, you know what? We've got these sets that we can use. We have these costumes. This is a cheap TV show. I mean, obviously, I'm pointing out the practical realities, but yeah, it does result in some bending of expectations when you know, I don't disagree with you that a sort of a more rational person would be like, what the fuck? These people are magic.
Yeah, and the whole sort of the episode was mostly guided by whoever arbitrarily had the gun at that particular moment. You know, throughout the thing, it's like, well, I have the gun now. You might have the gun, but I'm pointing it at you and you're not pointing it at me. And then I'm going to turn around and look over there for a second. Now you're going to point it at me. And now I'm not pointing it. And then there was one scene.
And then Kirk was like, well, I got some guns in space and I'll shoot them. And yeah. Now I have the guns.
In that scene, actually, before they shot the laser, when Krakow's people were attacking Oxmix, and then Kirk, like, they're all distracted by it. McCoy runs up and Krakow just walks up to McCoy and just literally like takes the gun out of his hand without any struggle or anything. Yeah. He just casually walks over and takes it. It's like, oh, I guess Krakow has the gun now.
But one of the most badass things Kirk does in this entire episode is just a little while before that, where, you know, they show up to Spock and Kirk show up to Krakow's place to get Krakow. They stun his two guys. Krakow's like, I've got you. Kirk's like, no, you got it backwards, I got you. And Krakow's like, nope. And they got the guys with the machine guns.
You're talking about like where it sort of goes to commercial break, and there's two guys with machine guns behind him. Yeah.
And so and then they lead Kirk into the room, and then Kirk just goes, you know, because Krakow has like Kirk's phaser, took it from him, and then Kirk just goes and takes it back.
Yeah.
He's got multiple dudes with guns on him, and Kirk just says like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna take this back, and he starts doing his little gangster act. And so Krakow does basically the same thing to McCoy a few minutes later. It's almost like an imitation of what Kirk did. Kirk just had the bravado to do that. Similar to, of course, the Fizbin situation.
Yeah. Mm.
Where Kirk's whole plan was just like, I don't take these people seriously, so I'm just going to fuck with them a little bit, and then we're going to beat the shit out of them. Like, that was the plan. The plan was like, I'm going to distract this guy. How am I going to distract this guy? I'm going to make him feel like shit for about 2 minutes, and then I'm going to look at him, pause for a really long time, drop my card on the floor, stare at the guy until the guy says, I'll get that, and then I'm going to kick the dude in the fucking face, and we're just all, like, all three of us are just going to kick the shit out of these people.
And then and then Spock will do a Volk pinch.
Spock was a Volk pinch.
That was impressed that Spock was able to improvise like that, and he was able to pick up, because he wasn't picking up on Kirk lying about that game on Krabos 5 or whatever, but Beta Antari 4
took him a little while,
but he was able to get the neck pinch in. Did you notice this game was inconsistent? I'm sure that was done on purpose or whatever, but I don't know. He was trying to confuse him, because he says, he's like, oh, look what you got, two jacks, you've got half a Fizbin already. And the guy says,
unless it's at night or something,
how wonderful for you. Shatner is having so much fucking fun in this scene.
Yeah, he turned into like a game show host or something.
wait
How lucky you are. How wonderful for you.
That's wait, you wait. Again.
That was the wrong one.
These are all you.
I love that we have the technology to just patch this into the board, and Dan is relying on the microphone. It's more charming that way.
Wait. Oh, look at that. You've got another jack. How lucky you are. How wonderful for you.
Yeah, the look on his face is just great.
So, yeah, so he basically says that you got two jacks. The guy's like, oh, that's great, another jack. He's like, no, if you got another jack, a third jack, why, you'd have a schralk. And he goes, a schralk? Yes, you'd be disqualified. You need a king and a deuce, blah, 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 knight, blah, blah, blah. And then the guy gets another jack, and then he goes, oh, look at this. You've got another jack. How lucky you are. So first he says, if you get a third jack, you're disqualified. But now he got a third jack, and it's okay. So, yes, I guess he was just trying to pull the old...
I mean, right from the beginning...
Harry Anderson from Cheers. You remember that character? He would do the money thing.
Mainly remember him from Night Court.
Well, yes.
Rest in peace, Harry
Rest
Anderson.
Rest in peace, yes.
But right from the beginning of that interaction, of the Fizbin interaction, Kirk is already making it very clear he's just bullshitting.
Yeah,
he says, all the players get six cards except for the dealer. The guy to the dealer's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. Right. I didn't notice at first. It took me a second. I was like, oh, he's fucking with him, or kind of making this up on the spot.
And he was trolling Spock because, yeah, of course, Spock didn't get it at first, and then Spock got, you know, Spock indicated, okay, the captain is using subterfuge, and that's my Spock impersonation.
That was pretty good.
Oh, Spock is using subterfuge.
He's using the subterfuge.
But when Kirk says, like, the odds are good enough, Royal Fizbin are astronomical. What are they, Spock? Yeah. Spock doesn't want to lie, has to think for a second, says, like, I have not calculated them.
Yeah. Kirk totally knew that Spock couldn't roll with that.
Yeah, he was just putting him on the spot.
He was totally putting him on the spot. That's pretty cocky, too, that he was like, I'll still get through
this. It's because Kirk wasn't taking any of this seriously at any point, even at the fucking end of the episode.
We'll call it a crunk.
Both Spock and McCoy are making legitimate points about the like, problems with this resolution.
Maybe someday they'll come and want a piece of art.
So there was so after he had the Fizbin, there was like some kind of, it looked like it was staged like a Batman TV show. Like fight scene.
It looked
like there should have been a pow and a zap.
That's great.
And McCoy gave a hard chop with no follow through. He did the whole chop on their neck.
Yeah.
And Spock, every time he's giving a Vulk pinch.
A Vulk pinch.
He's always trying to like help the people down all night.
Yeah, especially that one woman next to the record player.
Where McCoy was creepily like, yeah, you're really good at that.
Yeah, it was pretty. The delivery on McCoy made me think it was really different. He really got a lot more focused in his gruffness as the movies went on and stuff. Because, he was, you can still tell there's a certain amount of like, a light amount of disdain he has for Spock, but it's a little less gruff. It's a little more fun, but not better or worse. It's just interesting. His character's a little different.
Well, and speaking of this lady DJ, or DJ, I should say. Well, she is a lady, and she's also a DJ. Two separate characteristics that are not related to each other. But what I found interesting is, you know, the camera's all zoomed in on her when we see Spock and McCoy creeping into the room behind her, and she's just straight up just like, I don't even think the records are moving. She's just moving some knobs back and forth. And she's kind of like, moves the knob a little, looks at it, and then like moves it a little bit more. And that's when Spock comes up and all like goes like, yoink.
Yeah.
How configurable do you think radio stations were when it came to tuning the broadcast frequency on the fly like that? Because originally he was like, oh, it's easy. I'll just modulate the amplitude a bit.
Yeah, it's just radio.
Yeah, it's just radio, but.
Well, just modulate the amplitude a little bit.
It's easy to receive, but
NBC.
But to give, you know, and so meaning he was going to send a message up to. Was that the word?
It was a little bit silly and confused because Kirk was like, look, Uhura has already been tasked with monitoring the public radio waves. So she's taking care of that. So all Kirk was saying is like, get to the radio station, which I guess there was only one radio station, was like, turn off the fucking music and just be like, yo, Uhura, call us up.
So it was confusing because
they didn't really need to do anything.
Yeah, it's confusing that he needed to tune it to something like for output, not for input. Of course, that's easy, but like just for output. It seemed like he had to get to some special frequency or amplitude, because otherwise she couldn't hear it. And like you said, that she should have just heard it on all fronts. So it was kind of confusing. It's like, what? There's just one. I don't know. But anyways, I don't know how easy it is for a radio station to just change its broadcast frequency like that. You know, it seems like that's not something.
It depends
that's
on what
done.
If they had an FCC back then or not.
Yeah. Well, wow. I mean, it would seem like an engineer could do it easily either way. It's just if you're a DJ, what kind of equipment do you have?
Sigma Iosha might only have the one. Maybe part of the gang wars or whoever gets to control the radio station gets to pick the music.
Yeah.
That might. And oh, by the way, that actually, I'm just thinking that might help explain. I've seen this episode a number of times. Didn't notice it until the second time I watched it this week for this podcast.
Like the ad on the radio?
No, the ad on the radio was great. What I noticed was that all of fucking Krakow's dudes are wearing like barbershop quartet hats.
Yeah. Krakow even wears one at one
like
point.
A barbershop
he changed his hat.
And then all of Oxmix's dudes are wearing fedoras. And then when that like crazy weird other dude shows up, they're all wearing bowler hats.
Yeah.
So that was like the gang separation. So I was wondering if maybe like the, you know, Krakow wants the radio station because he wants to play barbershop tunes.
Ah, or something, well, you know? I love barbershop.
Right.
It's right up there with bluegrass. Now, they were talking about, this was a whole situation. They were talking about how, like, yeah, we're the gangsters. There's about 12 territories in the whole world. I don't know how they had their communication down with the whole world back then.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say back then. I should say at the period with the kind of knowledge
that they had. What are you talking about, Dan? This is a couple hundred years in the future.
Yeah, right. Well, it's all relative to the culture of civilization, pre-warp civilization.
What?
And so... How are they going to casually communicate with the rest of the world? I don't know. That's not important.
They got telephones. They all have two telephones on their desks for some reason.
They
got
to get on the blower, Dan. Weren't you paying attention? You get on the blower.
You get on the blower. They can't communicate with heaters, I'll tell you that.
Krakow's girl. They both Krakow and Oxmix have like girl Fridays, like gal Fridays.
Yeah.
And Oxmix is a brunette who's chewing gum all the time. And Krakow's is a blonde. I can't recall if she was chewing gum.
She was just making faces.
Yeah,
she's just
she
making faces.
Mainly making faces.
So we had Bella Oxmix, spelled O-K-M-Y-X. It's funny. And so he had one dude named, one sort of goon named Kalo. And then there was, on the other side, there was Jojo Krakow. And then he had Searle the Knife. Then there was a third gangster named Teppo. It's funny that they all have these, like, what we consider to be alien-sounding names. Yeah. I thought that's pretty... That's
sort of alien/Italian/Greek.
Did anybody recognize the guy that played Krakow?
I feel like I did.
I mean, he was on that show Alice, which is a very, like, it would have only been on when we were very young.
And, yeah, I
remember. So, like, people that are younger than us probably wouldn't know what the hell we were talking about. But
yeah.
Alice.
People that are older than us, no, Alice, and there was the movie Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. He was on that one, too.
He was a character. Same with the Oxmix fellow. He also was a character actor.
He reminded
me in a fair amount of stuff.
Vic Tayback.
Yeah, Vic Tayback.
He kind of reminded me of that guy who plays.
His parents were Syrian Americans.
The guy who plays the warden in Shawshank Redemption. He reminds me. He just got this kind of sleazy,
similar vibe.
Probably smells like cigarettes and beats people around and stuff.
Ah, but nice cigarettes. That nice.
He won two consecutive Golden Globes.
There's nothing wrong with smoking cigarettes. Wait. I meant to say that to be, like, you know, inclusive, but you shouldn't, I mean, smoking's probably... Why am I on this platform now? I didn't want to say, like, smoke, I didn't want to sound like a hypocrite.
There is, he probably has a nice
he was in the Shaggy
fatherly
DA.
Odor.
The Shaggy DA, you remember that?
Oh, the Shaggy, oh my God, I saw that movie. That movie's insane.
How about the Shaggy Dog?
Is it the Shaggy DA is like, I think, a sequel to the Shaggy Dog.
It was one of those Shaggy Dog movies.
The Shaggy Dog was the first one, and then the Shaggy DA,
is
plays a district
ridiculous.
Attorney.
Wasn't there one with some kind of Siamese cat that was all like, you know... That darn cat or something?
Yeah, that was a different one.
Anyway.
Milo Yiannopoulos.
It was a cat from outer space or something.
Cat from outer space. Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Mother the Car. There's a bunch of weird shit.
Herbie was... I always used to be really into Herbie.
Oh, yeah. Herbie the Love Bug.
Herbie Goes Bananas.
Yeah. Although, you know, I mean, Herbie was haunted, right? That was the deal? Like, isn't that the tragic thing about Herbie? Isn't that the deal? Where it's like, he's a funny little bug, but then it turns out, like, there's some evil, like, some horrible thing happened.
Yeah, I don't know if they ever answered the burning questions.
Demonic possession.
Yeah, I mean, a car does not just fucking, honk and drive, do clever tricks and stuff.
Well... And it wasn't like a robot car.
Is that the original Herbie or the Herbie with Lindsay Lohan?
The original Herbie.
It wasn't like the Knight Rider car, Kip or whatever. Because it was Kit, whatever.
Go on, but my lips hurt. Where is it? Jeez. Peace out.
Kip from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh,
Kip.
Napoleon Dynamite. He goes, okay.
Don't be jealous because I've been online chatting with babes all day. Yeah. Something like that.
I was thinking Kip from Futurama.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly. Kip Thorne, the famous astrophysicist.
I found out there is another Ernest movie that I forgot about.
Oh, yeah?
It's called Slam Dunk Ernest.
No way.
Wait. Is that going to be more or less problematic than Ernest Goes to Africa?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have a feeling it's more problematic.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that one.
I mean, I don't want to pass judgment having not seen that one.
Did Ernest go to like West Philadelphia or something?
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I can, because this is important. We always go on this route, and we always have to remind ourselves what it is we're actually doing here. It's 1995. It was made in 1995, whereas Ernest 1995. Goes
That's late. That's Africa. Late stage Ernest. Yeah. I think Ernest Goes to Africa was...
No, that was 97.
Oh,
Africa
right.
Africa goes
right,
97.
Right at the same time.
Both no, comedy right. slash family. But he's got, in the Africa, Ernest Goes to Africa, he's got some kind of mask on his face. He's making that kind of face.
Yep.
I'm guessing that Krakow probably has really high blood pressure because that dude's like fucking just like really yelling all the fucking time.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to think that Kirk's decision to put, you know, towards the end to put Oxmix in charge was because Oxmix at least was sort of a relatively reasonable acting person, whereas Krakow was just like running around yelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, if they really grew up on gangster culture, wouldn't they embrace some aspect of sort of rising through the ranks? Like, it's kind of interesting that they decided to actually agree on some kind of unity.
And the other boss that showed up, he didn't get shit.
He didn't get shit. He just got warped away. And
well, that's because he was all like, mother.
Yeah, he was whimpered. Mother.
That was disturbing. That was one of the more disturbing things I've seen in Star Trek is an elderly man yelling mother, who's presumably long since dead.
Yeah, that's true.
Mother.
So in this case, what's the?
Maybe he meant his wife, like Pence. Pence always refers to his wife as mother, doesn't he?
Spock.
Yeah, that's problematic.
Spock was
That boy is problematic.
Spock was saying, you know, maybe his methods are different, but he seems to be for the same goals we are talking about. Oxmix. He's like, yeah, unifying the planet. And you know, it brings back the question of like, I guess there's a fine line between unity and tyranny. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
So
that's,
I don't.
That's
it's kind of
that's what unity is.
It's just kind of yeah. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that's and I don't know what if Spock. It was being like extra deep because he was like that, or just being naive about. But it's Spock, so I have to assume he was being extra smart somehow. He's being very pragmatic somehow.
It's Vulcan. It's the Vulcan logic, which is that sometimes when you if you're being too you know, practical about things, if it's like, oh yeah, we just want to make it so people aren't shooting each other in the streets. Well, okay, install a fascist dictatorship. All right. People aren't shooting each other in the streets, but that's one criteria
that's
met.
That's an ends justify the means.
There's a whole bunch of other presumed criteria of, you know, democracy, freedom of speech, et cetera, that are not met under those terms, right? So Kirk's solution, you know, what gets arrived at over the course of the episode, Kirk slowly figures out, and to their credit, they try the other ways, right? They try just going down and being nice and meeting with the people. Then they try negotiating and trying to set up some sort of deal to be like, we're not going to help you, but we're just going to try to encourage you to go in this direction because it just makes sense to do that. You even agree it makes sense that there's too much violence and it's just a problem. None of that works. Kirk's solution, although he doesn't state it outright, is basically to say we have to work within their culture, right? We have to use what we know of their culture in order to help guide them to the decision we want. And this has been an issue that's been discussed in very recent times, particularly during the Iraqi and especially the Afghan war, where there was a situation where the U.S. government started hiring anthropologists, basically experts on Afghani culture in particular, in order to use their knowledge and experience in those territories for the benefit of U.S. foreign policy. That's not new. That's the study of anthropology was effectively invented by the British for exactly that purpose back in the day when they were spreading around the world and were using anthropologists to help basically trick people and manipulate tribes. It was kind of a reaction to what happened in North America with the Aboriginal Americans. Was we didn't know enough about them, so it was more of a problem dealing with them. The British were like, we're not going to make that mistake again. So we're going to send scientists out and learn stuff and then trick people using what we learned. In other words, if they deem a certain object as sacred or something, then you could take it hostage, for example, or you could mimic it, or you could play the role of a god manipulating their culture. That's what Kirk's doing, right? And it's as progressive as a show as Star Trek could be. And in this particular case, they seem to be making the initial message is you shouldn't be interfering in other cultures to fucking begin with. You could read that as we should not even be in Vietnam to begin with. But the solution is to basically treat them like children and be like, we'll just trick them into doing what we want. And I'm uncomfortable with that solution. It's kind of cute in a Captain Kirk way.
They even extorted him at the end a little bit.
Yeah.
Which Kirk kind of tried to justify, I guess.
Well, they tricked them into paying taxes, right? Yeah. So, again, going to what Jesse was saying...
But the Federation doesn't have taxes?
No, they tricked them into paying taxes to themselves. Because what Kirk was saying was, they're going to give us 40%, and we're just going to put that right back into the planet. Oh. I mean, they won't understand it at first that that's what's happening, but effectively, that 40% of whatever is going to be reinvested into the planet.
It is kind of interesting that he just sort of, on the fly, decided to have this sort of pet project, this planet, now that the Federation has to deal with for however long, I guess, even if it was meant in some, but it is, yeah, it's
and it's interfering, by the way. The whole non-interference thing, I mean, he's effectively interfered. Their society is now substantially different and on a different path than it was prior to the Enterprise showing up. Enterprise did not need to show up. They were just showing up to check out what was going on since the Horizon.
Well, this is like the whole Back to the Future thing where the damage, you know, is it really helpful to dig yourself in deeper? I guess Back to the Future was trying to prevent something that happened, but it's the idea of like, we're going to make things go back to normal by fucking with them more. Yeah. And I don't know. They even tried to sort of rationalize that at the beginning, where just basically saying, you know, the damage has been done. We're here to repair it, you know. But that's fucked up because, yeah, you're just digging yourself deeper and, you know, you're like getting even more. So what's to say that interfering more is somehow fixing things? I don't know. I think it was either Spock or Kirk was basically like, well, we've done it already. So yeah.
Right when they were about to beam down, they said something like the damage is something about, you know, we've already done damage. We've already contaminated them, or something like that.
Yeah, so they're making it some kind of binary thing, and it didn't have to be.
It's a good debate, I think. Honestly, it's a good debate because, like you said, the damage had already been done, and from a pragmatic point of view, you could say, well, this is increasing the likelihood that they get to where they need to be. By the way, where the Federation believes they need to be from their perspective, but get to where they need to be. More quickly and with less problem, because you could assume that this community could probably, this world could probably keep on going, and eventually one of the bosses would win out above the others and would unify things. There's no reason to expect it would always be just the same.
There's no reason to expect that sort of political system he's put in place is going to hold.
Another point I was going to make, I 100% agree. It's like, no, I agree. It's the flip side of the argument. It's like, on the one hand, it's like, well, they might have figured it out eventually, but it maybe a lot more people would have died as a result. On the other hand, the solution you've put in place, maybe it'll hold, but only if you really are going to have Federation ships go there every year and check up on things and threaten them a little bit if they get out of hand. You know, who knows? So I don't know. It's one of those episodes which was clearly meant to be a fun little one-off with a few little moral tales in there, but it's also what I'd be keen to see a follow-up on. And I don't know if there were any follow-ups in the novels or the comics. I would be, you know, if you, that's, you know, audience members, if
possibility for that,
if one. You know of any follow-ups to this story, if somebody went back to that planet, I'd love to check that out. But on screen, I mean, it'd be really interesting to see, you know, Next Generation era or something, go back to the planet and see how, is it still all fucked up?
That would be interesting.
If this was a Next Generation episode instead of a TOS episode, we probably would have learned more about what was in the report from the Horizon. They probably would have given the audience a little bit more to go with about what's happening on the planet. That's just sort of the TNG style, I would think.
Yeah, like TNG would definitely. I don't know. They would probably make you think a little bit more about like,
because the TOS guys, you see them like in action. It's like, all right, we're going down to the planet right now. And then there's very little discussion about what happened. They're just like, we got this report and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
TNG would tell you, like, they'd give you more about, like, what maybe what happened, because unless it was a mystery that they had to figure out, then, like, then it's not a mystery, so they would just tell you what happened.
Yeah, I mean, do you think in some way, I mean, well, in some way, whatever, is, I don't know if this is kind of a duh question or not, but do you think that, how much do you think TNG is a reflection and but also a reaction to the original series in terms of how they would approach things? Do you think they would be more thoughtful about things specific? Do you think they're more thoughtful about things? It seems like they would. And is it in part reaction to how TOS treated things?
I think it is. In some cases, TNG was overtly or implicitly, reacting to the original series. I think in other ways, of course, it's just the nature of the era. In the 60s, there was a lot of progressive attitude, but still a lot of bravado, a lot of belief in the correctness of democracy. Right. Not that I'm anti-democracy, but I think that, you know, in the intervening years, we've demonstrated that democracy comes in many forms and under many names and is not always what we actually believe it to be.
Do you ever have someone who's always into telling you we're actually a democratic republic? There was a guy I worked with.
Those people are pedantic.
Yeah, he was always into talking.
It's not a democracy.
And every time heard someone use that word randomly about something, he'd like sneak his way into the conversation. He's like, it's not actually a democracy. It's not a democracy. It's a democratic republic. No, and then he'd start talking. I must have heard him give that speech.
Those are the people who have destroyed democracy. and especially the colloquial platonic ideal of democracy that people generally think of when they think of democracy. But anyway, so I don't know. The other thing is that zapping sounds. The other thing is that
it's covering up my rustling noises.
Call you Russell.
So TOS had this bravado to it. It had this, you know, belief in.
Belief
in, you know, diversity and all these things, very progressive attitudes, but it still sort of was proceeding as if it's like, well, our beliefs are the right ones. And they sometimes questioned that, sometimes they debated that, but much less so than what happened on TNG, where they were often, you know, sometimes asking a little bit harder questions, maybe not as directly analogous to real world events as TOS. TOS often was a little bit more like, you know, on the nose. But TNG would be, I agree, would be a little bit more nuanced about it. And it's sort of the 80s, 90s perception would be like, you know what, maybe, you know, that was post-Vietnam War, in pre-Iraq wars and things like that. People are starting to get a little bit, you know, uncomfortable with the way things are going. So, yeah, I think that Picard would have had a very different answer to all of this. I'm not exactly sure what it would be, but it would be, I don't think he would leave the Criminal Enterprise.
But he probably would have gotten into a nice costume and gone down to that planet.
Every once in a while.
Dressed like Dixon Hill.
But he would have had a nicer hat on, probably.
Yeah, he would have had a nice hat on.
Nicer suit, too.
Well, he'd be wearing a fedora, so everyone would assume he's one of Oxmix's dudes.
So, yeah, the Kirk's first line as a gangster, he was as, well, now that we have Bella, I'm going to put the bag on Krakow. Yeah. He says, say, that's nice material.
Who's interfering? We're taking over.
Nobody's going to put the bag on me anymore. Nobody's going to put the bag on me anymore. He had some weird fuzzy hat. He was the only one with a fuzzy hat.
His fedora had some fuzzy hat. And then when he got the bag on Krakow and he's sitting on his chair, he's telling Krakow, you know, we like to put one guy in charge who pulls the strings and then we pull his.
Yeah.
And he kind of looked and sounded like Jack Nicholson from the Batman, 1989 Batman. Yeah.
What do you think we're here for? To get a cut of your deal? Forget it. That's peanuts to an outfit like the Federation, right?
Well,
he couldn't help but do the Picard pause there. Or Picard.
At the end, they call him the feds.
William Shatner Kirk. Chakotay gave her the watch, not Tuvok.
Well, you know, to your point about his accent, he gets more and more into that character.
He starts pronouncing the remaining. Near the end, he starts pronouncing all his TA, his does, like does.
Yeah.
Like, he really gets really
When he calls up Scott, he's like, this is Captain Quake.
Yeah, he does. He goes, Captain Quake, yeah. Captain Quake.
That's when you can tell he's more Canadian. Hello, you can tell that, like, the accent's, like, he's trying.
Yeah, it's a Canadian.
It sounds funnier. It's like, this is a Canadian talking.
A Canadian fella.
That's your story, Buster.
Trying to play a 1920s Chicago gangster.
That's your story, Buster. What movie was that? That guy who sounds like that. Hey, I sound like this in more modern movies. but I'm old. See?
Are you talking about Jimmy Cagney?
I don't know.
He's not in modern.
No, you're
movies.
Talking about more modern movies.
He's sometimes in comedies, and you know, he's like.
Are you talking about Harvey Fierstein, who was in Mrs. Doubtfire?
Harvey Fierstein. I don't know.
I bet you're talking about Harvey Fierstein.
He sounds like this all the time.
You're talking about Gilbert Gottfried?
It's not Harvey Fierstein. No, Harvey Fierstein, he's the one that sounds like this all the time. I'm Harvey Fierstein. Right?
Okay, now do Gilbert Gottfried.
I'm Gilbert. That's really bad. I sound like something else. Report we did. That's in some inside baseball. That's some inside baseball. Okay, Gilbert Godfrey. Why am I Gilbert Godfrey? Why am I Gilbert Godfrey?
Okay, now do Gilbert Gottfried as Spock.
That's not logical. That doesn't even sound like Gilbert Gottfried.
I think you have to use his other voice. It's all like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That, you have to use that
his real voice. The real Gilbert Gottfried
this
voice.
Is Gilbert Gottfried this is, here. This is Gilbert. That's not logic. I can't do it. It's amazing I can't do Gilbert Gottfried.
Because Chico needed the money.
That reminds me of, there was a, Spock's all talking about logic. Logic and practical information do not seem to apply here. You admit that, says McCoy. To deny the facts would be illogical, Doctor. A very clever sort of Spock exchange. To deny the facts would be illogical, Doctor. That doesn't sound anything like Gilbert Gottfried.
I know. I don't know. I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to bring that up, but it's okay.
The aristocrats. No, I can't. I'm done. I can't do it.
We can't. What are we going to do? We'll have to get the real Gilbert Gottfried on the show. We could do. He does cameo. You know the cameo thing. You heard about that?
When people
y'all hear
show
about
up?
This cameo? Y'all heard about this?
It's when like famous
I've heard
people
about cameo.
Give me a free advertisement. No, cameo is a service where famous people like Gilbert Gottfried.
I'm having a cameo.
Oh,
on this
you pay them?
You
can.
Right
you can have a cameo everywhere.
You pay them, and they will record a message for you, like a video message, and it can be whatever you want. Pretty much, they'll say whatever the hell you want. And so, Gilbert Gottfried, I know, does those. Pendulette does those.
We should do it, and if we admit that we did it, it'll make it cooler.
That's
it'll
what that
make
guy Jim Varney used to do before he was really famous. Before he was Ernest, Jim Varney would do all those ads.
So yeah, he would do all those
going
ads.
Going back
right.
to our Ernest discussion.
Yeah, he would. He would do all those. That's when he had the Vern ads.
Yeah.
So wait, if you pay for the cameo, do you let the audience know that you're paying for it, or is it supposed to be incognito?
I don't know. I mean, most people use it for gags on Friends and things like that.
I'm not saying
not Friends the television show, Friends the human beings who you associate with.
Friends the humans.
I'm not sanguine about hunches, Captain, but I have no practical alternative.
I knew you were going to bring that quote. I was like, this is a quote that Dan's going to repeat tomorrow.
Yeah, you're just starting predictable. Wheels, Mr. Spock. A flivver, Captain.
the whole, I know it was cheesy, but
I
could not get enough of the comical Kirk driving.
Yeah, I thought that was great that they dedicated that much time to it. It kept going on.
Oh,
I thought
know,
it was really funny.
I think they have a clutch.
Yeah, Spock was all excited. He was like, oh.
Yeah.
I think and then of course the completely predictable but still somehow very well executed Kirk being like, I've got it now, and then driving in reverse.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And they had like that was when they were playing their humorous music and they had the xylophone going. The
classic comical Czech music.
The comical xylophone. Do you say Czech music?
No. Yes, that's what I said on it's got star Czech. Podcast.
Oh, Trek music. I really didn't know what you said. So yeah, it's the whole xylophone thing that makes it sound like
I got you. I can get you some Czech music if you want. It's pretty good.
Some Czech mix.
Yeah. I used to call it Bohemian.
Yeah.
But I like Spock sort of disses on Kirk's driving, but Kirk seems to take the criticism well. He's like, huh, okay, I guess I suck.
Yes,
seems like
Kirk isn't taking anybody, including Spock, seriously in this entire episode.
Like Kirk's checked out.
He's just having fun. I like when they're hanging out with that kid,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. And that kid's all like playing, like sticking a knife up in their face.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, what's with the ears? But they totally rip off that kid, right? That kid never gets a piece of the action.
No, he never gets a piece of the action. Yeah,
I couldn't figure out who that actor was if he turned out to grow up to be anything or if he was on anything
he
else.
He probably
as
died.
A kid.
Maybe that's why you don't see the kid again. Maybe he died during the filming.
He died like during the actual.
I think
production.
They ran through fucking kid actors back in this era.
Yeah,
I think prior to like 2005, kid actors were basically. They literally put them in a grinder at the end of the day.
So, yeah, in that scene, the Kirk goes, hold on, Spock, out of the mouths of babes. Who you calling a babe? I'm calling you a babe. Yeah. You calling me a babe? Yeah, I'm calling you a babe, but there's nothing personal in it.
Yeah.
Sit down. You know a way you can get in close to them? You don't even know what the action is going to be. I figure it's got to be a thick percentage or you wouldn't be trying to hit Krako.
Thick.
Logical.
Do you think he spelled thick?
Krako. Krako.
T-I-T-H-I-C-C.
What do you think we're here for? To get a cut of your deal? Forget it. Thick with C-I-C-C. Thick. Yeah, they said they spelled. That's actually where it originally came from.
From this episode.
From this episode. Not even from that time period. It's from this planet.
Yeah.
This time period in the future. Yeah. So, who are you calling a babe? That's when he brandishes the knife. He's like, you calling me a babe?
Right. He's got like a knife.
Kirk
has like a machine gun. And he's right up in his face, and the kid like pulls out a knife, and he's like, "Oh shit,
that kid's got bravado."
Yeah, that one gangster walks up to the baby carriage and just casually like points a gun right in the baby's face.
Don't look like
face.
The trusting type.
Yeah, it's like he really had to use his gun to do it. Knock it off, Sawbones. Now listen, what do you mean, penny ante operator?
I like when I think it's Oxmix just calls Spock.
You're a penny ante operator.
Calls him a dummy.
Oh yeah, you dope.
Oh yeah.
Doesn't wait. Someone calls someone.
Or McCoy's is like McCoy says something, and the other guy's like, "Don't give me those blue eyes."
Yeah.
And he's like, "What?"
Yeah.
He's like, "What?"
Oxmix goes, "Krako's put the bag on your captain." Spock goes, "Why would he put a bag on our captain?" Yeah. And Oxmix goes, "Kidnapped him, you dope."
Yeah, but early but
he'll scrag him
somebody
too.
Somebody find out what a heater is.
No, it was at a different point when they're actually in the room together. Somebody refers to I forget what it is, but I think it's referring to Spock as a dummy or something. And it's funny because Spock kind of does his eye look, and McCoy is the one who kind of gets mad. He's like, "We're trying to help you," but McCoy is kind of like, you can call Spock a lot of things, but you can't call him a dummy.
Yeah, this was after Oxmix betrayed them for the second time by going back on a truce with McCoy and Spock. He goes, Spock's like, "I understand we had an arrangement, a truce." And Oxmix goes, "I was hoping you'd think that, dummy."
But they didn't.
How's my gangster? It's pretty terrible.
It's
all right. That sounds brilliant. It's getting better.
I was hoping you'd think that, dummy.
Mother.
Remember those Bugs Bunny cartoons?
That's like an Edward G. Robinson sort of gangster. Right?
Yeah, see?
That's awesome that it's something.
Yeah, see?
Remember those Bugs Bunny cartoons where there was that guy?
Where do you get off?
Hey, Rocky. Hey, Rocky. Yeah.
Hey there, Rocky. Where do you get off? You better put those hands up above your head, otherwise you won't have a head to put your hands up.
I
like that quote at the beginning where it's like, "Oh, you ain't going to have a head to put your hands over." You know
what is that from?
At the very beginning of the episode, when they first get captured, the guy is all like talking about getting petrified and stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then he's like, "Put your hands over your head. You ain't gonna have a head to put your hands over." And I like that as being one of those cleverly convoluted, semi-nonsensical things a gangster would say, or at least we perceive.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. The writers had a lot of fun with trying to sort of throw in as many kind of gangster kind of exaggerated words that they could.
But, you know,
you're trying to make trouble? Who, me?
towards the end when, as you said, Oxmix, you know, betrays Spock and McCoy again, but he didn't count on
the fact that
Kirk can just keep escaping from things. The first time he escapes from with the Fizbin ruse, right? So that's just using sort of like clever subterfuge and then kicking the shit out of some people.
Yeah, that was fun.
The second time he uses, it's so funny to me that they spend over the course of like two different scenes, they show Kirk like he's captured and then he's looking around the room.
Yeah.
Then he looks at the radio and he's all opening it up.
They give him a room full of shit.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, he's gonna do some clever shit. And then they come back and he's all like put up a tripwire and stuff. And then it turns out his whole clever plan is to start
and then they come running in like, "What the hell is happening?"
And then he just punches the guy in the face and then puts a blanket on the other guy's head and does that crazy like undercut into the guy's belly.
Yeah, that blanket struggle was a little awkward. First of all, there was one where it seemed like he was covering the guy's face so he could fake a stage kick, so it looked like it.
Yeah.
But the second one, he's like clumsily trying to get it over this guy's head and choke him with it. It was, I think his stage combat performance was much better in Where No Man Has Gone Before. Mm-hmm. This one, it was a little stiff, I thought.
And I think partly it's that in that particular scene.
Maybe it was a suit.
That's a good call. Could be the suit. It's also the that room was very confined, so that
it's true.
And they had an actual tripwire. So
yeah.
I mean,
did you notice that they were playing the music when they tripped over it? It went like doing, doing.
Yeah.
It sounded like this exaggerated kind of bang.
That's classic soundtrack.
Yeah. It was good. I love how soundtracks, when you listen to them, well, not the I forget what the word is for it, but not the music, but the
diegetic sound,
is that what it's called, the sound effects?
Yeah, I think diegetic is the in the scene sounds.
It's ridiculous
incidental music,
how exaggerated those are to this day, but it's weird without it. It's weird. Yes. Like when you punch someone in the face, it's like five different crunching sounds or something and a thud maybe.
And I want to know.
And it's absurd, but it's so ingrained in us that it sounds strange without it.
I really want to know, and it's one of those things that's very different.
Is that Foley?
Yeah,
is
the Foley. Foley does the sound effects.
That's more the sound effect end of it.
I'm really curious to know how much of that is we need that because that's just how our brains operate, and how much of it is just because that's we've been trained.
Right.
That's part of the language of cinema, right? Just
right,
like wide screens and different apertures and different lighting and stuff means something different. You know, a close up from down, angled from down below looking up means something different from, you know, like the camera shots. And I really kind of was really pleased and amused with the camera shots in Oxmix's office when he's trying to communicate with Scotty for the first time, and he and the girl are all looking up, the chewing gum girl, they're all like looking up in the sky, and the camera's all like way up high.
He's like, hey, ship.
But the point being is we've been trained in all this cinematic language, and that includes the music and the sound effects and things like that. And I agree with you. A lot of times those sound effects are do not sound like they would sound in real life, but when they're not there, it does sound bizarre. And in fact, the language of cinema has evolved in the intervening time since 1968. So there are moments where there are things that do seem potentially awkward to us when we're watching an episode where maybe a scene goes on, like with the kid, when they're talking to the kid, there's a few things where there's just sort of like these, it's almost like an extra second of footage where there's nobody saying anything. And it's sort of like, no, that would be cut out now. I wouldn't call it bad editing. I would just more call it, that was their choice at the time. And we've continuously shrunk the amount of time there can be between like dialogue and a conversation or something like that.
There is that way that everyone seems to talk back then that make fun of. It's like, everyone talks like this. Like a gangster newscaster.
Accent. Yes. We've all formulated this accent. That's called, they refer to Runyon-ish. It's a temporal Runyon-ish. Accent. A temporal accent is one that's an accent that's associated with a particular time. Chronometer.
Chronometer. So it's funny that they still use Wilhelm screams. People say Wilhelm. They don't say Wilhelm.
But they probably should say Wilhelm.
Yeah,
that's how it's supposed to be.
To each their own. What are you going to do?
Pick your battles. But yeah, it's funny they still actually use that in movies, and you can kind of get away with it just because it's one of those things that's kind of like, hey, there's that sound. It doesn't really take you out of it. At least it doesn't take me out of it.
I didn't know it was a thing until like 10 years ago.
I think same with me.
I think one of the arguments for the Wilhelm scream, look, there are times you don't want to use it. You probably don't want to use it in
The Notebook.
In I might want them to use it in The Notebook, but yes, perhaps not in a movie like 1917.
Yeah, it's a little disrespectful.
But in a movie like, for example,
when it comes on, in
The Two Towers, there's a very obvious Wilhelm scream. But it doesn't take me out of the fantasy world of The Two Towers. In a sense, it accentuates the fact that you're like, I'm watching a wonderful movie. I'm watching this creation. Look how much fucking work these people put in to give this to me. So I think that's where it can be used effectively when you want to be reminded that you're watching a spectacle as opposed to, you know, watching some dour film that it might pull you out of the actual.
Like The Notebook?
Yeah, like The Notebook.
I think there was another.
Or Ernest Goes to Africa.
I still haven't seen that one, though. Maybe.
I don't think I've seen it. I remember seeing the previews
Slam Dunk,
for it.
Ernest.
I haven't seen Slam Dunk.
I think
Ernest.
I might have seen Ernest Goes to Africa in the theater. I just have no recollection.
In theater. You seem to assume that you've seen it in theaters.
I bet you.
I've seen it. You don't remember it, but you don't assume you saw it at home or on TV or something. You assume you went
because
to the theater.
Because in the 90s, from 1992, 93 till well into the early 2000s, but particularly up till 2000, I went to the movies all the fucking time. I mean, there were times where I'd watch two or three movies in a day at the mall where it was like $3 to go see a movie.
Oh, yeah, it was super cheap.
Once the prices started going up, and
that dollar theater, that Lohman's, there was it was $1 for a movie. Yeah. Back in the day, it was $1.
Actually, now, did you hear that because of the quarantine and all that, some movie theaters that are opening up in the places that they are, including around the U.S., some of them, you know, they have no movies to show. Right. So some of the theaters have been told they can open up. Most of the theaters simply aren't opening up. But some of the more independent chains that don't have the, you know, the financial resources of the big companies, they want to get some business.
Yeah.
So they're showing old movies for like $2.
Well, everyone always says how it's the concessions or whatever that they make money anyways.
Yeah.
So
that, maybe, yeah.
But
well, if you can get the movie for cheap, then $2 is fine. Well, they're not going to fill the theater, but they're getting something.
I don't know.
It's like the gas station. The guy that owns the gas station, he's not making money off the gas. He's making money off of like oil changes.
Yeah,
and
I think
like Fritos and shit.
Cigarettes.
Someone told
cigarettes,
me.
Cigarettes, maybe.
Condoms.
There was a
prophylactics.
I was listening to
Sex pills.
WAMU, is that what it is?
I hope so.
Yeah, that's the one.
WAMU.
I hope you were listening.
The NPR station, the local NPR station for the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area.
They were saying that they all played it up. It's like one theater is open and the business is booming. And it was like this drive-in theater. And they did that thing where they
what
sort of led you along. NPR kind of leads you along sometimes.
Was this NPR? It sounds more like Fox 5.
What show?
No, see, that's the thing is it wasn't. And they weren't talking about it like it was a bad thing or a good thing. They were just talking about it.
Yeah.
I don't remember what show it was.
What time of day was it?
Shit, man. Like, I don't know. It was like one of those things where, you know, they
expect me to know what time it is?
Well, you know how they'll have this thing where they'll just talk about some subject.
Get off my case, Jesse.
Yeah, I know about NPR.
I'm explaining it. Let me finish. Before you answer my question, let me finish the question because there's more to it. Thank you.
Classic.
Thank you.
Classic.
Thank you. Are you with me? Am I explaining this properly?
I'm all
ears.
Am
I explaining this properly when I say that sometimes NPR has these little 5-minute snooblets?
Yeah.
And they give you a little story thing and then a little bite-sized story thing that happens. And I can't remember what. I can't be bothered to when it was. It was probably like in the evening or something, but it was basically NPR kind of tricks you and leads you along sometimes, but
it does.
I mean, it's more sinister than it meant to be.
I know what you mean.
In a fun way,
it tricks you in a fun way.
Yeah, with their little snooblets.
Yeah, and so the way they started, it led you to be like, how did this movie at theater get so much business? And they snuck in. They didn't even say
where was the movie theater?
They didn't even say like, because it's a drive-in theater. They didn't do that. They just said this drive-in theater, like it was nothing. Like they snuck it in.
Was it local or were they
like it was they snuck it in as if it wasn't even like a thing. Like it was assumed. It was in California somewhere.
Oh, okay. So that means it was probably
the other side of the country.
It wasn't
man.
One of the local shows. It was probably
it was
a
just
show
NPR
like
thing.
All Things Considered that was talking
all
about something
All Things
nationwide.
Considered, even things from the West Coast.
So, anyways, drive-in theaters are. I like that idea of having.
It wasn't like the Kojo Namdi show.
No, it wasn't the Kojo Namdi show. Kojo Namdi show.
Well,
Namdi.
And so, just to bring it back to Star Trek,
it's
generally,
got Star Trek.
And to this episode in particular,
a piece.
Drive-in theaters would have been popular during this
back
period,
then,
presumably.
Yeah, it's a.
That's where you got a piece of the action. I think.
Well, this. I mean, this goes to show that, you know, free market can't always keep up, right? Because suddenly, if we had 1 million drive-ins, they went out of business because they just went out of business because nobody wanted them anymore. But now, if they were open, they'd probably get a lot of business. But they're all gone. So,
well, that's
so.
A
if this
point.
Thing lasts like 5-10 years, you know, then maybe that'll start to happen. But
yeah, I'd be down for the drive-in. Sounds like a cool idea.
I've never been to one.
Yeah, me neither. I mean,
apparently there was one.
I hate the movies. I'd rather stay at home.
Yeah.
I'll go to a drive-in.
Apparently, there was a drive-in around here. There was a drive-in around here that some hip kids went to.
Because you can, like, you can hit some weed in your car, right?
Yeah.
I don't know anything
about
that.
You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want in your car.
I don't know anything about it.
Legally, in a drive-in, they can't stop you from doing anything.
It's private property.
As long as you paid the ticket and are not making too much noise. No, if you're not hooting and hollering too loudly, you're going to be fine.
Someone told me that
you're not causing someone to scream in terror.
Someone told me that a cop told him that if you have your keys in the ignition, then you can get arrested. But what do they do now for cars that don't have, was that, you think that was bullshit to begin
with?
Bullshit. Yeah, it sounded like bullshit. Anyways, okay, yeah, bringing it back to Star Trek.
Cops suck.
Star Trek.
So the book, this book, right, that they made a direct comparison to the Bible, and it's
the
like,
book.
How can this book, sort of, influence a whole people enough to, you know, do this. And there was a direct sort of correlation of that. Now, if you're going to say that, you could also make an argument. How does that argument compare to the one that violence in movies and video games make people do, you know, crazy shit? You know, it's like, yo, you've got this book, this religious book, and then, you know, a bunch of people, you know, have their opinions on it, and a bunch of, you know, a whole, it created a whole culture of people, just like this created a whole culture of people. And so people are influential, right? I mean, we can't just say people aren't influential. So when it comes to movies and video games, like, I'm not arguing that it causes, I have my reasoning as to what passes in my mind for why it's different. But
you want to ask us first.
Well, I'm just
you're opening up the floor.
Well, I guess it's a little contrived.
No, it's a point I had not considered. I think it's a very, very good one. I would say the difference is in how do people perceive the thing, right? Because they've set this up as the book is set up that for whatever reason, right, they decided that maybe it was the colorful imagery, maybe it was the interesting stories. I mean, it's dramatic. Maybe that's what got people very particularly focused on this book. And somewhere along the line, something switched such that they took the book so seriously. You could make, honestly, now that you bring it up, you could make an analogy to what occasionally happens to some Star Trek fans. And of course, we are broad. We love all Star Trek fans. We think you can be a fan any way you want to be a fan. But there are people who do take it more seriously and have Star Trek influence more of their life than others, right? It's a spectrum, presumably. And you could see the same thing with Harry Potter, Star Wars, other things where people can take the elements of the story, the philosophies of the story, and take it to heart that it, and it influences them in that way. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but if it rises to the level of a sacred text and an immutable text, something that you have to do it this way and no other way,
immutable.
Yeah, that doesn't work if you like Star Trek, because a lot of the messages of Star Trek is quite the opposite. It's to accept, to hear and understand and sympathize with other people's perspectives and positions, even if you disagree with them. So I don't know. That would be my particular response to that.
Yeah. I think definitely, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely how the intention and sort of how it's pushed and how it's promoted. Because, you know, video games and movies are promoted as fantasy. They're promoted as fantasy. You can say, oh, well, it's fantasy. And they're like, how do you know it's fantasy? It's because that's how everyone, it's just, they don't tell you it's real. You know, everyone knows it's like fantasy.
Violence is also down across the board. I mean, the argument for, particularly for video games, but I think it extends to movies as well, is, Hitler and Stalin and stuff, they weren't playing video games.
Yeah, right.
They were watching movies about, like, people being happy and having babies and shit.
Right, so, right, and people, there's always been insane people. So, correlative evidence aside, it's just, why is that, I guess, then? You know, why? And so, yeah, one's promoted, I guess, as fantasy. One's, it's about intent, like you said. Is this book that presumably was pushed upon people, like, I guess the Bible, I don't know, was kind of shown as people as being the way. Although, you know, was it like this book? We'll never know. I mean, this book wasn't promoted as being law. Like you said, at some point along the line, people decided to take it as fact.
The Bible was absolutely pushed on people.
Yeah. Right, right. And so, yeah, and that's sort of, the assumption, I think.
You were making the point.
That's safe assumption.
You were making the point earlier, Dan, that we just, the next generation, and Jesse, to your point as well, that on the next generation, they would have given us this information. They would have given us more background what exactly happened to get them to this stage. They, either the characters would explain it or the Starfleet people would suss it out. And another thing they didn't investigate that they could have, you could do a story like this, is they have these different bosses, but they all appear to have essentially the same interpretation of the book, right? Yeah, they're all following the same rules, which is why they're all fighting. Planet. Whereas if you look at something like the Bible, right? Let's just even take just the New Testament, right? The New Testament has resulted in a tremendous number of different philosophies from that same text, right? Because some people focus more on the really nice stuff. You know, there's a lot of the stuff that, a lot of the philosophy that Jesus in particular espouses in the Bible, that's attributed to Jesus, is a very pleasant, you know, be kind to people, avoid violence, avoid war, pay your taxes, but, you know, make sure you're able to do, you know, do what you need to do spiritually and all that. There are other aspects of the Bible that are much more problematic from a modern peaceful point of view, in terms of you know, how you're supposed to treat certain people, or you know.
There's a lot of like, someone does wrong, so you murder their whole family.
Yeah,
like, and that's the law. Yeah. That's justice. And
there's lots of stuff people have used throughout time to justify something horrible from the Bible. It's like, listen, exactly. I pulled these few words out of the Bible, and I say that they mean this, so yeah. It's okay for me to have a bunch of fucking slaves.
So from my view, the Bible and this 1920s books are more extreme examples of video games and movies, but I would argue that exactly what's actually happening is the reverse. The art reflects the reality, and then people then use that art to justify whatever they want their reality to be. If you want to use the Bible to justify being anti-immigrant, pro-slavery, anti-interracial marriage, you can find stuff that will help you with your argument. And then other people will also be able to find stuff in the Bible and look at the Bible from a different perspective and say, absolutely not. The Bible says the opposite. The Bible really wants us to be peaceful and love each other and forgive each other no matter what things we do. So it would have been neat to see something like that with this 1920s book, to be like, are these different bosses kind of like approaching things from a different perspective?
Because it's funny that it was sort of like an objective history book from the 20th century and not a collection of, you know,
various writings over several centuries
lumped together in the Bible.
So it wasn't like implied to be a fictional work, the Star Trek.
Yeah, it was like a history book.
But we don't know whether it was a pop history book.
Yeah, right.
Or whether it was an academic history book.
Right.
Or whether it was a revisionist history book, or what the writing style was. That's another thing.
Like those dinosaur books we got as kids, that was like the truth back then, but now it's all weird.
Yeah, now dinosaurs have feathers.
Yeah.
Some of them, just the theropod ones.
I miss the good old days when they put the feathers on our dinosaur.
I miss the good old days, when the dinosaurs, they didn't have the feathers,
Tyrannosaurus, what happened?
What happened to
Tyrannosaurus?
He's got short arms and maybe long arms. Brontosaurus, Brachiosaurus, Brontosaurus, Apatosaurus. First is the two of them, then there's one other.
They were lizards. What's all this bird shit?
How do they even eat with the little hands?
Hey, pterodactyls. Pterodactyls aren't even dinosaurs. What the fuck is that?
Pterodactyl tear up my butt with a spoon. Well, that didn't come out quite how I meant it to.
It's got Star Trek.
It's got spoon.
It's got spoon, for real, though.
Well, all right. Anything else? Anything else exciting to talk about, or we can sum up? I mean,
I had all these lines. I'm not going to go through all these lines, but
Are you sure?
There's a lot, and I've already been gone through a few of them. But I did try to make it a point to get most of the lines where it was some kind of fancy gangster talk.
Johnny, do it.
You can just toss out some. I mean, I can do a little sum up, and then you can toss out clever lines.
What are you talking about?
wait a second.
Yellow fire plug.
Put that heater down.
Yellow fire plug. I did like that they landed next to the yellow fire plug, which is fucking, of course they did, but I mean, I don't know. That tickled me for some reason.
I think I have his coordinates now.
Well, when Spock almost gets run over, isn't that when they warp right down? His answer is fascinating.
Yeah.
He does that twice. That's like his way of saying like, you know, bless your heart, or maybe even like, what the fuck? I don't know. It's some kind of.
McCoy is always about, you know, getting involved in car accidents almost. When the city on the edge of forever, McCoy gets involved in.
Whenever Spock says fascinating that episode, it's kind of like a little jab, like a little fuck you.
Yeah,
like kind of like, that's annoying what just happened.
This is human stuff.
This is interesting. It's fascinating. It's not annoying and confusing and unexpected. It's fascinating because instead of being pissed off by the humans, I learned from them.
Or McCoy's like, this looks like home. And then Kirk's like, home was never like this.
Put the chopper down, Kalo.
The chopper. Yeah.
Got him, boss. No sweat. Not counting small fry.
Pour yourself a drink.
This here's a heater. All right, Burnham. You heard right, pal.
Burnham, like Michael Burnham. And the guy Cracko, his first name was Giorgio. Giorgio Cracko. Maybe he was Captain Giorgio's cousin.
Maybe.
Okay, Pally, we're going for a ride. Listen, Pally, this could either be a taxi or a hearse. You know what I mean? He can't make a date with a broad unless I know about it. He didn't offer you beans.
Beans.
What did he offer those beans?
Because doesn't one of them say beans?
He says beans.
That's too bad. Put him on ice.
I like when Kirk is when they first beam down I really like how Oxmix just immediately susses out Kirk as the captain because he's like, which one of you is the captain?
Yeah,
and Kirk is all
that depends.
That depends. He's like, all right, you're the captain.
Yeah.
But then then he hands Kirk a pool cue and Kirk is completely flummoxed by this pool.
Well,
you know, I was like, what is this?
Apparently Oxmix is too, because those are some bad shots. He's like picking up the cue ball. At one point, he's fucking hitting the non-cue ball with the cue stick.
But at the end, Kirk is like walking on that pool table. Like,
yeah.
Like he's the boss. He's like, he already knows what to do with the pool table. It's like, I'm going to walk on this motherfucker.
Yeah, he really had control of the room at that point. Well, that pool table I kept thinking about the movie Happy Gilmore, the one before, Billy Madison.
Because
they had a pool scene too, where it's kind of like the equivalent of when they play an instrument, but they're not playing the instrument.
Yeah.
They're totally off, like their fingers aren't doing the right thing, where they're just kind of hitting the ball around and you can tell they're not even trying, and it almost looks silly because the shots are so bad and so ridiculous. It's like, you're not even trying, why are you even bothering? He was straight up hitting like non-cue ball with the cue stick. I'm telling you, it happened.
I saw it.
That's your story, Buster. My boys will put you down. Wanna bet? Keep moving. One move out of you two, I'll drill them. Give me the hardware.
We should just string these all together, and that'll be the next highlight clip for the podcast.
Oh, there was one. In to juxtapose all the gangster talk, there was one made by Scotty who said,
"Yeah, I like that.
Enough to chew neutronium." I can't remember the whole line.
I thought you were going to refer to when he said he's going to put you in you're going to be wearing a pair of concrete galoshes.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that was good. Right. And he's like, you mean
cement overshoes?
Yeah, cement overshoes. They both were silly.
Well, so the first time I was watching this, when Scotty said concrete galoshes, I was like, he's getting into it. But then, like, when the guy corrected him, I'm like, oh yeah, concrete galoshes is stupid. I mean, the other one's stupid too. Cement overshoes is also silly. But
the one that I was originally talking about is Kirk goes, "You got Krakko on ice," and he goes, "He's here, mad enough to chew neutronium, but behaving himself." See, that was like some future talk,
yeah,
as opposed to the future gangster bat old school talk.
You must be that Scott fellow.
Yeah, that's right. He said that. Can do, sweetheart.
So, as Dan continues to read through the list, we'll
forget it. That's peanuts.
we can slowly close up shop here.
Where'd you get them ears?
It's a fun episode. It's something I'd kind of like to see more. I hope if they do a Pike show or maybe on a Short Trek or something.
Knock it off, Sawbones.
It's not just the humor. I like the idea of having a humorous episode that still has a pretty deep meaning in it, because as silly as it is, the backdrop and all that is silly, but the ultimate message is and it's a debatable message, of course, especially the resolution, but the idea of non-interference. The episode, I would suggest, somewhat undermines its position. Not much, but it somewhat undermines it, because it's going in with a really strong message of, this is why you shouldn't fuck with people, but then it follows it up with, but the people are already fucked with, so let's just now manipulate them and their culture to meet our own preferences, even though there's no real reason for this there's no clear reason as to why the Federation needs to be involved at all. I think, Dan, you were mentioning that earlier. It's like, it's just a project that just Kirk has just gotten them involved in now.
Yeah, once a year they got to.
They were just checking
schedule.
It out because they got this radio message from a million years ago. Dan is now holding a dolphin, a baby dolphin.
That's actually, I'm throwing my Korgness. It's not me.
That's a baby dolphin.
It's not me doing it.
All right. They both got the Korgs out. Both Jesse and Dan, who are, I must stress, professional musicians.
Oh, you know what?
Professional grade musicians.
Speaking of, that does sound like a dolphin. Speaking of sort of like the rules that have been established kind of arbitrarily, maybe not arbitrarily, but I didn't yes and you just now. You said it was me. I should have just gone with it and sold it for radio. Yes and. But instead I was like, no, it's Jesse. And that didn't help the joke. It just kind of.
You mean the improv rules?
Yeah.
Yeah. In improv. As we all know, you have to do the yes and. You can look it up on the internet. Wikipedia probably has an entry on yes anding.
I want to talk to this creep. Now listen, I'm getting tired of playing patty cake with you penny ante operators.
So this episode.
What do you mean penny ante operator?
He's playing patty cake.
You're a penny ante operator.
This episode is comical, but it does have that non-interference message. and it has the go ahead and fuck with people if you've already interfered the message. And the only issue with that end thing is there's a practical solution Kirk has come up with. I think you could strongly argue that it will be somehow beneficial to these people in the long term. But as a message for the real world, for the audience watching at the time, to be like, you shouldn't mess with people, but if they're already messed with, you know, try to fix it through whatever means you want. And the problem with that is by 1968, the entire world had already been fucked with, right? It's not like we're going to encounter new people at that stage. Everyone had already been fucked with. So it pretty much gives the audience carte blanche to be like, all right, we'll go around the world fixing things. And for a long time, the Federation did have that kind of US Western mentality, which is we're the good guys. So it's okay if we go try to fix things. Maybe we'll make some mistakes along the way and then we'll just fly away and not remember it again.
But like was mentioned already, I'm having a really hard time with that now. It's like in the background, just like I can barely hear it.
I was trying to be helpful.
No, I'm sorry. It was. I applaud you. That was impressive.
Depending on the perspective, Jesse, you may in fact have been helpful.
No, maybe you should do it more often because, like, I should get better at stuff like that because that's my failing. It's my failing.
Discombobulated Dan is also a very entertaining form of Dan.
Yeah.
From the audience perspective, it probably was indeed helpful.
Dan combobulated. We can assume. Well, like we were saying about how they didn't maybe go into as deep as much as they should have. The basic thing is we still don't really know why they just heard a signal, and it was from the whatever ship came 100 years before.
The Horizon.
Horizon, that's right. How did they really know that they needed to come back to the... Why? Because there's some guy said he wanted to be called boss?
Well, we don't know what was in the Horizon's report. That was what I was saying.
Right, yeah. Right. And so, yeah, we did... Right, yeah.
They got signal from the Horizon. Right. It took 100
and
years.
And we know the Horizon was lost.
Yeah,
you're... Hands.
No, that's a good...
So we don't even know what happened to them. Whatever happened to the Horizon, was it because of what happened to them on Iota?
No, that's a good point. I didn't think about that they had a report. I thought it was... For some reason in my head, I had it as if they just caught a signal of something, you know, but there was a whole report.
Eventually we'll have to...
Yeah, it just took like 100 years to get
there. You know, there's the episode, and it's... the name is escaping me right now, but where Kirk... In this episode, Kirk and Spock got to dress up as gangsters, and in this other episode, they get to dress up as Nazis, because it's a very similar concept.
That's actually in the credits. It's funny that's in the credits, is an image of Spock wearing a swastika.
Well, and because in that particular episode...
Along with that crazy fucking alien thing at the very end.
It's a very similar story. It's about what happens when you interfere in a culture, except in that episode, it's a person has done it overtly, right? Yeah. Whereas the Horizon, it appears to have been an accident. In this other episode, it's a contemporaneous person, a historian, who must not have been a great historian, because in his mind he thought, well, the tenets of Germanic National Socialism, if you strip out all the anti-Semitic stuff and anti-homosexual stuff and anti-gypsy stuff and anti-black people stuff, it's a good way to organize a society. And so he's trying to help the society by doing this. And so that's a pretty interesting episode. We'll have to get to that one at some point in the future, because I think that's an interesting one as well.
Keep them until I send for them. We're going to make some old style phone calls from this locale. So you locate the man on the other end of
the
blower.
Is there any other way to make a phone call besides an old style phone call?
He's going to see now. Dan's going to have to start
I ruined
over from
it.
The beginning.
Shit, I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to start from
God,
the beginning.
Discombobulated
now.
Dan.
I'm
all
sorry,
right, Dan.
I'm shutting up.
It's all you.
I'm zipping it.
Keep them until I send for him. We're going to make some old style phone calls from this locale. So you locate the man on the other end of the blower and give him a ride to this flop. What? Find the man at the other end of the phone. Now, it was actually better you interrupted, Jesse, because I had already fucked it up halfway through anyway. So this gave me a good excuse. Now I can blame someone else.
Yeah. And blaming someone else is ultimately the message of,
yeah,
of
right.
all
that's,
of Star Trek.
That's
actually
how the world goes round.
Yeah. Man.
For real, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's looking out for each other. They're looking out for themselves.
Looking out for number one.
Okay, so let's talk about what are we going to talk about next week. We haven't done...
We
haven't done Discovery in a while.
We haven't done Discovery.
Since we did the pilot episodes, the first three episodes.
Well, we did Year of Hell, Discovery.
No, that's Voyager.
That was Voyager, bro.
Oh, God damn it. I'm sorry.
That's
we haven't done Discovery.
We haven't done Discovery in a while.
Let's do Discovery.
Discovery's trigger... God. Damn it. Trickier.
This is all out there, folks. All you folks out there in quarantine. We are all getting older.
We're losing our minds.
We're also in quarantine. Our brains are, in fact, melting. So we apologize for the consistent errors in speech.
I think I need some vitamin D.
My brain mixes up the word Voyager and Discovery.
The planet is...
It's a similar theme of stuff.
It's being taken over by the Federation, but we don't want to come in here and use our muscle. You know what I mean? That ain't subtle.
Did you notice at the end they called them the feds? Let's take our chances with the feds up there.
So we call them the feds a couple times.
So what we do is we help one guy take over the planet. He pulls the strings, and then we pull his...
I recommend, because you're right, Discovery is tricky because it's so serialized.
I mean, we could do Short Treks, but we'd have to watch a few of them, and that would have to be one of those, like, you know how the TV shows, the sitcoms, they do the thing where they tell a story? Where they tell, like, three different stories?
Yeah,
you
like know, on Bob's Burgers or the Simpsons Halloween episodes.
Yeah, everyone does it.
I think all of these things are doable.
I recommend what we do next week is, because I want to do the Short Treks at some point, too, and, you know, they're... You know,
I want to do Short Treks.
We'll bundle them up and I'll enjoy a child. We'll just bundle up those Short Treks and toss them in a pot and just stir them all around. I recommend we do Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, which is from the first season of Discovery. I believe it's the 7th episode because it is a very standalone episode. It's a Harry Mudd episode, which is fun.
The Harry Mudd episode.
It's a time travel episode, kind
of.
Rainn Wilson. It's got some crazy shit. It's funny. So that would be my recommendation. What say you?
What's it called again?
Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad.
Word, yeah.
I also like the title.
Magic the Mike, the Sane Magic Mike, Chatham Tanning.
Yeah, we can do Magic Mike as well.
I saw that
As a supplementary. I haven't seen it. Yeah. My understanding is that,
it's fine.
It's quite lovely.
Yeah, I mean, Channing Tatum, boy howdy.
I liked him in, This Is the End. He was in that movie, This Is the End. Yeah. Yeah.
That was Aziz Ansari was in that briefly, right?
A lot of people were in that movie very briefly.
That was the comedy.
It was a comedy. Comedic movie. Comedic film. All right. So.
That's a very unique pronunciation.
Starring comedians.
Next week, we will do Star Trek Discovery, Season 1, Episode 7, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. So that's something for you all to look forward to in the audience. We have to look forward.
Send us an email in a couple days to remind us which episode.
Say, hey, Dan talking. Say, Dan, write us an email and says, hey, Dan, where's Jesse? I want to talk to Patrick.
Yeah, and that's an option. You can
that's one way about
like and subscribe or whatever the kids say. That's an option.
Pee-pee and poop on the floor. That's what the kids say now.
You can email us. We're going to look forward to the deluge of emails that we're going to get now that we're on the list of top 60 Star Trek podcasts to listen to in 2020 on the FeedSpot. blogs.feedspot.com/etc. You'll find it. It's top 60 Star Trek podcast. Now that we're on there, we're just getting deluged with new listeners. And so we will look forward to your emails. We will look forward to your reviews on iTunes and Overcast and Google Podcasts.
A deluge on the luge.
You can write us an email at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com, which is kind of neat. You can follow us on social media.
You can eat me.
It's Got Star Trek on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find us that way Facebook. We are relatively active in all the top Star Trek groups on Facebook, so you can find us out there. And
go to our subreddit.
Yeah, we have a subreddit. It's got everything.
Was I not supposed to tell them about that?
No, you can. The subreddit's fine. Okay. You can go there. If you want to write messages.
You can go there.
We post the episodes there. We got them on YouTube as well.
Yeah,
so
dude.
So that's always...
Fucking YouTube.
Because some people are crazy.
They got all kinds of shit on YouTube.
Yeah.
Lorraine Newman.
So basically, it's got Star Trek. You search for that anywhere, and you'll find it. Granted, you're already listening to us, because if you're hearing this.
I got rights.
Yeah.
But you might be listening to this on their website.
How the hell did I get here?
But maybe you can tell somebody else to listen to
maybe
us.
Maybe your friend has phoned you up, and yeah, he's playing the podcast to you through the phone somehow.
Have you heard it? Have you heard it this way?
He's like calling you up on a landline.
Have you heard it this way through the phone?
He's playing it from his phone, or he's playing it, he or she are playing it on YouTube through their TV speakers, and they're holding their smartphone up, and they're like,
can you believe what this guy is saying? This guy Dan,
it's your cousin Marvin Berry. You know that new sound you were looking for? Well, get a load of this. And then it's got Star Trek.
If your cousin theme. Marvin Berry's calling you up, man.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is that actor I couldn't think of earlier. That sounds like this. I got rights, you know. I think I was just doing Gene Hackman.
Is a Gene Hackman.
Yeah, you could do Gene Hackman.
That's a Gene Hackman.
I watched The French Connection recently.
Was Harvey Fierstein in a movie with Gene Hackman ever?
I don't know. Maybe. He's been around a while, so has Gene Hackman. Anyway, so
Gene Hackman was in A Bridge Too Far.
What about The Bridge Over the River Kwai?
I don't believe he was.
What about
in that
a bridge? The Bridge to Terabithia.
Nah,
that was
a movie, but it was a book too.
I've emptied my. Are there other movies to start with Bridge?
I don't think so.
All right,
Bridge of the Commons.
What is that a thing?
Bloodlet Bridge.
All right, Dan's got to go, so we're gonna go.
Fuck, man. Oh damn!
Damn, that was fucking
Why
harsh.
No, I don't mean he's gotta leave. I think he's tired or something. He's having an episode. So that concludes our episode.
This episode.
I commend you. That was brutal.
Just because you are a character, that concludes. Doesn't mean you have character.
So yeah, next week, magic to make the sanest man go mad. Go to websites and
not Magic the Gathering
and Instagrams and all that, and we'll see you there. Until then, we hope you have a lovely evening. This has been Patrick. That's been, what's your name, Dan?
My name's Dan.
And then we got Jesse over here.
I got Jesse.
That's Jesse.
It's got Jesse.
It's got Dan. It's got Patrick. And we hope that you've got a lovely evening or afternoon or morning or whatever is going on there. And
whatever
safe.
Time of day it works for any time of day.
Around the world, whatever time of day it works. So stay safe, have fun, and we will talk to you next week.
Virus.
The name of the game is called Fizbin.
Fizbin.
Fizbin. It's not too difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Each player gets 6 cards, except for the dealer, the player on the dealer's right, who gets 7.
On the right.
Yes. The second card is turned up, except on Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, look what you've got, 2 jacks. You got a half Fizbin already.
I need another jack.
No, if you got another jack, why, you'd have a shrunk.
A shrunk?
Yes, you'd be disqualified. Oh. Now, what you need now is either a king and a deuce, except at night, of course, when you'd need a queen and a four.
Except at night.
Right. Oh, look at that. You got another jack. How lucky you are. How wonderful for you. Now, if you didn't get another jack, if you had gotten a king, why, then you'd get another card, except when it's dark, when you'd have to give it back.
If it were dark on Tuesday.
Yes, but what you're after is a royal Fizbin. But the odds in getting a royal Fizbin are Spock, what are the odds in getting a royal Fizbin?
I've never computed them, Captain.
Well, they're astronomical, believe me.